My name is Amy. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict, and I came into program for the first time in 1978. I think I went to one meeting, and then I came back in 87, and I went to meetings for a couple of months, and then I came back in 88. And at that point, I got it. And I don't know why I got it and why I couldn't get it before, but I truly understood for the first time that I had a life problem and that food was a symptom and that food interfered with everything. I had lost my weight was up about 80, 85 pounds more than it is right now. At one point in program, I had lost maybe about 10, 15 pounds more than I have lost right now. Menopause has just dialed it up just a smidgy bit. And I'm trying to decide like how little I'm willing to eat in order to deal with that or whether this is the new, you know, 60-year-old version of me. And, you know, and the lovely thing about program is it's not about the number on the scale. It's about my healthy relationship with food and all of my relationships, given that this is a workshop about relationships, all my relationships, my ability to have good relationships is based first and foremost on my being able to maintain a reasonable relationship with food, you know? And I'm a firm believer that the steps are primary, and you'll find that there are people in the rooms who, you know, argue whether you have to do the steps only after you get abstinent or whether you can get abstinent by working the steps. And I'm here to tell you, I am thoroughly, thoroughly agnostic on this issue. What I do believe is that if you are using not being abstinent to avoid working the steps, please just start working the steps and see what happens. And if you're abstinent and you're not working the steps, you need to work through the steps because that's what this program is all about. This program is not about being on a diet for the rest of our lives. It's about getting a relationship with ourselves, with other people, with whatever it is you call that sense of spirit, that sense of power that is beyond yourself and beyond other people. People shorthand that as God. I tend to use higher power. Whatever it is that works for you, I'm also fairly agnostic about, you know, even what I need to believe in. But what I do know is that I cannot be in right relationship with another human being until I am in right relationship with myself. And I cannot be in right relationship with myself until my food's in place. And that when my food, you know, I've been abstinent now since 1988. So a goodly long period of time. And I have, you know, praise God and the creek don't rise. I have not yet had what I refer to as a big R relapse, you know, where I just threw up my hands, you know, said F it and dived right deep into a big old bowl of, bag of, box of, shopping cart of. That has not happened to me. And I'm so grateful, so, so grateful because, you know, I was the person who woke up in the morning and I just ate. I wasn't a huge binger when I came in. That took me a long time to understand even what binging was, because I didn't do huge, vast amounts of quantity in one sitting. I simply got up in the morning and began to eat. And then I ate, and then I ate a little bit more, and there was no space between any of those eatings and any probably one of those, you know, and I'd eaten myself up, you know, quite a goodly amount. And if I hadn't come into program, I believe that I, all through my 20s, I gained about 10 pounds a year. And I believe that I would have continued doing that so that, you know, I would have been many, many more pounds more if I hadn't hit program when I did. So I came into program. People said, well, why don't you give it a shot? Why don't you actually do it? And I got that amazing, magical gift of willingness. And I basically kind of tricked myself into it. I said, okay, fine. I heard all those tools last year. At that point, I think there were only 7. I heard all those tools. I heard about the steps. I heard about, I don't even know if I knew about the traditions, but I heard about all of them. I will do every one of those things. I will do it all the way. And then when it doesn't work, I can leave with a clean conscience. Well, I started going to a meeting a day. I got a food plan. I got a sponsor. I made 3 or 4 phone calls a day. I went, just like thinking, writing wasn't a tool then. Abstinence was a tool, but now it's plan of eating. I did all the things. I got service position. They gave me a service position when I was 3 weeks abstinent, 2 weeks abstinent. They let me speak at a meeting when I was 17 days abstinent. I remember walking up and going, they said, you speak. And I was like, I can't do that. I'm only 17. She's like, there's no abstinence requirement at this meeting. And, you know, people will say, oh, well, let's have an abstinence requirement so there's more, you know, stability and responsibility, and, you know, that the newcomer will be better served. And I'm always the first one to lift my hand and say, well, yes, I understand. And that wasn't my story. You know, that when I came in, they let me do stuff fast. And would I have stayed? You know, part of another bit of relationship was I got, like when I was 3-4 weeks abstinent, I got sponsees. And they really were food sponsees. I was a food sponsor, really. And I had like 2 or 3 call me in the morning and 2 or 3 call me at night. And I know there were times where I sat and I considered whether or not I was going to eat. And I knew that people would be calling me the next morning. And then when they called, you know, one of the things this program talks about is honesty. And I would have to tell them that I wasn't abstinent. And that kept me. And it taught me that, you know, as we work through the steps and we work through our character defects, one of the things that I was taught is that every defect is on a continuum with some asset. And in that moment, I was taught, as I, you know, out of fear and out of pride, didn't eat so that I could be there for my sponsees, I found out that the opposite of being afraid and being full of pride was actually being responsible and having integrity. And so the program taught me little by little, in exactly that kind of incremental way, what it meant to be in right relationship. Like I said, first with food and myself, or maybe with myself and then with food. It goes back and forth as to which one comes first, chicken or egg. But by being in program and taking on bits and pieces of service. I learned about being in relationship, equal relationship with other people. I don't know what any of your stories are like, but my story was always that I would do almost anything to please you if you would just tolerate and let me be here. You know, and that was in pretty much every relationship I had. And it, you know, was in my relationship, my romantic relationships, and it was in my relationships with my siblings and with my parents and with people at school and people at work. And, you know, I was a little bit pathetic and a little bit whiny and a little bit needy. And, you know, that piece in the big book where it talks about by over-expecting from other people, we create, I think the word they use is revulsion in other people. And, you know, that was me. Like, you know, in a parentheses over in the corner, there was my name and my picture. Like, you know, I made other people loathe me by trying so hard to flip myself into a pretzel that they would like me. Nobody likes that, you know? Nobody likes that. And it's not until I got onto my own feet and began to say, oh, this is who I am. And I very much like, you know, doing things this way, and I very much don't like doing that. You know, I love going, for instance, to theater. I, however, have pretty much seen my last ballet. You know, and someone's eyes just came up. She loves ballet. You know, and that's great. She and I are not going to the ballet together, but maybe we can go to theater together. Because that would be some, maybe she doesn't like theater, she likes movies. You know, I don't have to be all things to all people. And I learned that in these rooms. And if I'm not being all things to all people, then I'm not going to be all bent out of shape and mad, like all the time that you're not reading my mind and doing what I want without my having to tell you. Right? I mean, it's just that when I think about how like inside out and twisted I was about so many things and how complicated it is. You know, I've now had relationships being mostly sane. I certainly won't claim anything better than mostly. But, you know, I aim for sanity in any given day, in any given relationship. And I've now had relationships where I've been the same one and the other person has been all needy and all like, you can't quite figure out where they are and, you know, what's going on. And just recognizing how exhausting that is. And, you know, that my job is to, you know, clean house and keep my side of the street clean. It's not about other people. And I did go ahead, since this is called relationships and, you know, the traditions, I did go ahead and look through all the traditions and I have some things to say. I will let you know that, you know, just in terms of the ways relationships changed in my life and partly when I came into program, you know, I was in my late 20s. And so I was just coming out of that phase of, maybe some people come out of it earlier, but I was coming out of the phase of rebellion and reactivity to my parents and my family. And I had been in therapy, I'd done some other things, But I had a very, very particularly complicated and difficult relationship with my father, and, you know, who was often angry and often very hard to tell, like, how he was going to react. So I couldn't trust that 5 minutes from now, I was going to have the same person that I was dealing with as I had 5 minutes before. And we lived in a fairly small house. So his mood dictated everything. And I could be equally reactive back, which wasn't very good. Did not lead for a calm situation in the house, for sure. But I'd been out of the house for 10 years by the time I came in. And, you know, 2 years later, you know, I danced at my wedding with my father and played the song that he had always sung to me, which as a child, I hated the song Once in Love with Amy, because my dad always sang it. It was so exhausting. But, you know, and that was back in the days before the internet. So I worked like a dog to get a copy of that song. It wasn't an easy thing in 1990 to just, you couldn't go on the internet and just find a copy. And, you know, my daddy cried. And I just am so grateful to program, because I was able to see him pretty much from that point on as a person who was broken for all the different reasons he was broken, you know, but it wasn't his job at that point to get better, nor was it my job to say that the way he behaved when I was a child was okay either. I had to forgive him, but I didn't have to ever say, oh yeah, that's a great way to treat an 8-year-old. You know, these things can be separate. I could learn to forgive without ever having to say he was right, because he wasn't. But that could be okay, separate for a 28 or 30-year-old woman from the frightened child. And he was a person with incredible sensitivity. He was the most romantic, and you know, he would just be a pile of mush if you wrote 4 lines in a card. You know, he loved pictures, and he loved our children, and, you know, it just, and there it was. There was a relationship that he didn't have to change, and it was healed, you know? And I was a hard teenager, and I was a frightened 20-year-old, 20-something-year-old, and I was a good and dutiful and caring daughter and caretaker for the rest of their lives. You know, and they lived for another 20, 25 years from that point. You know, and so one of the things I have to say is that this program has allowed me to have that to happen. You know, my relationship, particularly with my dad, was broken, quote unquote, beyond repair. And yet that wasn't true. And I tell people who are in difficult, difficult situations, particularly with their children, to remember that the story is not over. The story is not over. And I've learned that in these rooms, that I will always get another chance, and that that can start today. And it doesn't mean that everything can be healed presto magic today, but the journey can start today. So going back to the traditions, on page 62 of the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, it says, our troubles are of our own making. And the traditions really go through and help us. I mean, we can read them straight and they help our meetings to survive, and they help our meetings to interact with our intergroup and with World Service. And that's great. And there's a lot of places that you can get that reading of it. And but I'm going to be thinking and going through them with an idea that, you know, how do the traditions interact with my life and my relationship with you and you and you and you and my husband and my children and the neighbor and so on. So step one, or excuse me, tradition one, I'm just going to open this real quick. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. And the spiritual principle there is unity. And so my well-being always will depend upon the growth of the relationship, the well-being of the relationship, the well-being of if I'm in a work or volunteer situation, how well is the organization doing? What can I do to help the good of the whole? And so I love our, it's now not so new, but the second edition, because of all the questions for the traditions, I find them very helpful. And things like do we focus on our differences or what we have in common? So am I watching my husband to see that he's doing and saying things exactly the way I would do it? And the answer is sometimes I'm doing that. Does it help? Does it help the family? Does it help our relationship? No, not really. Do we belittle other people? You know, again, so if you go through all of these questions, and I'm not going to go through each and every one because it could take a long, long time. But if you do go through these questions and you think, how am I in relationship with, pick who the person or the group is, do any of these apply? How do they apply? So, tradition two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And so on page 104, the principle is trust. And the idea in terms of relationships is that no one in the group is the authority. We are trusted servants. We are serving the relationship in terms of maybe a marriage, or we are serving the organization in terms of a work. That's trying to wrap your brain around. But I loved this piece on 104. We find that most people are willing to cooperate cheerfully with decisions they help to make. Instead of arguing, sulking, nagging, or commanding, we learn in OA to state our needs and desires in an adult way and let others tell us theirs, expressing our willingness to go along with any decision that takes everyone's needs into account. Anger and bitterness are often replaced by harmony and peace when we treat each person with respect and really listen to what everyone has to say. When this happens, a loving God's will is expressing itself through us and our OA groups. Tradition three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Okay, so this one you've got to be a little creative. What is the common purpose? What is your relationship's identity? What is, you know, what's needed for the relationship or the job or whatever to exist? I saw one place where it basically said, you know, the only requirement is a desire to be in relationship. Cool. Thank you. And the quote that I pulled off of this one, so before OA, we may have placed special requirements on our friends, coworkers, or family members. I will love you if. Perhaps we demanded that others live up to our standards, or we placed conditions on friendships. If you disagree with me, you have betrayed me. In OA, we've learned that people can differ with us on important matters and still be loving, supporting friends. When we apply OA's tradition 3, we find the treasure of friendship where we least expect it, with people we once would have excluded from our lives. Such treasure is all around us, and all we have to do is open our hearts to receive it. OA is where we learn to open our hearts, because it is here that most of us first experience unconditional acceptance. Tradition 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole, and the principle is autonomy. And this one, I don't know about all you all, but I have a tendency to want other people to do it my way. Can we talk about loading the dishwasher? Anyone else in this room think there's one right way to load the dishwasher? And is that making your household work better? Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? So, you know, again, when I love these traditions, because if you just tweak them just the tiniest bit, they apply to all the things that aren't working, at least in my life. And so the balance of this is really important. And tradition 4 ends with, it challenges us as individuals, as OA groups, and as a fellowship to strike a healthy balance between our responsibility for ourselves and our responsibility to each other while we grow and work together as companions in recovery. So often in relationships, particularly in romantic relationships, we let go of some piece of that, and it doesn't work to anybody's benefit to not for both people not to be working to be their best, and for one person not to give more and let go of who they are. So step 5, we have but one primary purpose: to carry the message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. And this again is one of the ones where you have to kind of tweak it a little bit. You know, what's the message that our relationship, our family, our work is trying to share? But the spiritual principle is purpose, you know, and, you know, the purpose in a home is to encourage the members of that family to grow, just like it came out of step out of the tradition 4 as well. And, you know, so how do I carry the message of that I believe that the world's, if it's not a good place, it can be a better place, that hopefulness? And how do I do that within my house? And how does my household do that outside? You know, it's just interesting. Tradition 6, that the tradition actually reads, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility, outside enterprise, less money, problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And the spiritual principle is solidarity. For me, this again goes back to, I need to be focused on the unit that I'm thinking of, whether it be my family or my marriage, or my family of origin, whatever it is. I need to do my part, not take on other people's part. It means that I don't get overcommitted and that I don't allow conflicting interests to make things more complex. Thanks. I think I will go ahead and take just a few more minutes, but thank you. So I don't get to keep it simple. Seven, the every OA group ought be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The spiritual principle is responsibility. Do my part. I sometimes want to be a princess. I sometimes want other people to do the thing. And I especially want them to do it without my having to ask. Doesn't work for me. I can't tell you what will or will not work for you, but I can tell you it doesn't work for me. So, and the good part on page 136 is it says, paradoxically, being fully self-supporting means we are now free to ask for help. So it's not only that I have to do my part until my fingers bleed, I have to know when and how to ask for help. Tradition 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And the spiritual principle is fellowship. In OA, we learn to give our loving support to others freely without trying to advise people or change them, nor do we look to others to work our program for us. And, you know, so service is its own reward. When we approach others in this way, we often find that they respond to us with a new depth of love and trust. One of the things I've had to learn, it's so hard, is when I give to you because it feels right that I give to you, you are not actually obligated to give to me when I am in need. That's not how it works. Therefore I need to decide, do I really want to give to you or to her or to this one or to that one? You know, and I am responsible for myself when I'm in need. Hopefully other people will come through for me. There is some connection between giving and getting, but it's not one-to-one, and you don't get to decide when it's the other person's turn to give to you. Tradition 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And the spiritual principle is structure. So this is the quote I chose from this one is part of what I need to always remember is that speaking up is important. Speaking my truth is important. However, quote, once we've spoken, we need to accept that conflict may result, that our words may not be heeded, and that we have no way of enforcing our understanding, and this says of the traditions, but I will say of the situation. We speak in favor of the traditions, but I will say the truth, as best we can, leaving the results to our higher power. Tradition 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. The idea of neutrality, of not pulling for other people, of living and letting live, that I focus on whatever unit it is that I'm part, and I avoid debate and controversy. And I ask myself, how much do I like drama? What, if anything, about this has to do with my need for a little thrill? Tradition 11, our public policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. The spiritual principle is anonymity. And this is both about not promoting myself, but it's also about protecting other people's confidences. And I try really hard when it's easy when you're in a group of women and they are complaining about their partners to add one more little thing about your own partner. And I cannot certainly say that I am perfect about it, but I do remember that I would be hurt if he were to speak about me in such a fashion. And I try and use this principle here. And then the last tradition, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And the spiritual principle is spirituality. And I will go back again to the big book, page 83. Our spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. And those are my thoughts about relationship and the traditions. And thank you very much for letting me speak.